Hi, everyone. This is Special K, Kevin Latch for the Black Flag Cast, and I am sitting with a very distinguished actor who has the art known as anime for some time, David Wald. How you doing, David?
Very well, sir. How are you?
I am excellent. Would you like to tell my audience a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a Taurus. I like long walks on the beach and men who aren't afraid to cry.
Oh, ladies, heard that.
Wait, more? I've been acting in anime for about 10 years. I've been acting on stage since, maybe the dawn of man. No, it's been about probably 30 years I've been doing that. And it's all I know how to do. I have no other marketable skills, so.
You're just plain stuck.
Yes, my choices are made.
What a bummer. But how did you come to becoming this actor of 30 years and voicing for 10? What is the story of Common Guy to VA?
Well, it was actually pure happenstance. I was working in a play, as a matter of fact, here in Houston. A friend of mine in that play, her name is Elizabeth Bird, was very close friends with John Swayze and his wife, Deanne. And they came to see the play and saw me in it. The play was called, Silence by Maura Buffini. And, John Swayze talked to me after the thing, we hit it off really well, and he brought me in for my first job, which was, Shadow Skill, I believe. For a while I was playing, I was doing, guy number 42 and, soldier C3 and a lot of stuff like that for probably about a good year before I got my first role in anime, which was Kyuichi in Tokyo Majin. And that's kind of how it happened. I mean, it sprung directly from my work in theater, and because of my work in theater, they found me and sucked me in to what was then ADV.
Very nice, very nice.
Yeah, so and I'm Swayze to thank for all of it, really. He is my Obi-Wan, my anime Obi-Wan.
Well, thankfully, though, he's still among us, and he did not suffer Obi-Wan's fate.
Yes, sir.
And many, many voice actors that have come into anime and such have come in, many of them from fandom. Were you a fanboy, sir?
I was not like a super fanboy. You know, I had seen some anime titles. As a matter of fact, funny story. I was working at a Blockbuster Video back when we had those. This is when I was in college, long time ago.
The Stone Age.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle 90s. Mm. And we had at Blockbuster Video a selection of anime titles. At the time, the heading was Japanime. So that's how long ago that was. And I remember three titles that caught my interest, which I took home and watched. One of them was Galgo 13, The Professional, which was the film. And of course, years later, I would actually get to voice Duke Togo in Galgo 13, which was kind of a big, weird circle. The other one was Grave of the Fireflies, which again, years later, I did a voice in that one when Sentai redid that. Actually, I'm not sure if it was ADV or Sentai who redid that at that point. And the other was, now I've forgotten. Oh, it was Vampire Hunter D, which I just got to do the count for. So these three titles that caught my eye back when I was in, back in the middle 90s when I was working at Blockbuster Video, I've gotten to now voice in all three of them, which is weird. But and of course, as a kid, I'd seen like Speed Racer and Gatchaman. Of course, on Saturday mornings, they called it Battle of the Planets. So I had only just barely really dabbled. I really loved it. It was really, I think, Vampire Hunter D that that sort of opened my eyes to the potential of anime. I mean, the art in that one is just extraordinary. And that's back when they were drawing it, you know. So no, wasn't like a super fanboy. And it's really kind of, it's really the same way I got involved in theater. I mean, I was always, my family was not a, we weren't theater attenders really when I was a kid. So it's not like I went to see a lot of theater. I really got involved in it as a participant. Mm-hmm. And anime is sort of the same way. I mean, certainly before I did my first play, I had seen a play or two. Likewise, before I voiced anything in anime, I had seen an anime or two or three. But no, I didn't really come from the fandom pool.
Mm-hmm. Well, that goes on to the characters you play, and some are more obscure than others, starting with one that I did not, I was amazed to find out you had done was, those of you who, like, the very awesome series Space Dandy, you voice, Meow's father.
Yeah.
And I have to say, how many takes did it take to say with a straight face, I like boobies?
Oh, who knows? Somewhere they've got a gag reel for that, I'm sure. Yeah, that was awesome. That was, I was very, very glad to be involved, with Space Dandy, which already at the time they pulled me into the studio was already rocking it on Toonami. Mm-hmm. And I think the story behind that was, Joel, who of course plays Meow, mm-hmm. And who was also involved in directing, that show. I think, you know, there were a couple of ADR directors for it since it was, you know, such a huge title. And so I think there were a couple of people who sort of cycled through directing that show. So the session I attended was directed by Joel, and he had told me at the time that he was looking for, you know, because he has sort of a textured kind of smokyish voice. They wanted to find a Meow's father who sort of had that same quality. So that put me in the running, and we recorded it, and it was a keeper, and that was it. You know, that was because that was recorded in Dallas. When I go up to work in Dallas, I tend to work for a very long day. And so you'll bounce around from studio to studio and, you know, record for 3, 4, 5 shows in a day. So it was, you know, that was one recording session in a day that probably had, you know, as I said, four or five other sessions in it. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember many details about the recording of that role, but I was very, very glad to do it. I was, it was a fun character, and of course a completely ridiculous show. So I was thrilled to be involved.
But of course you do more prominent roles, such as, Pauly, in One Piece and, Hannes in, Attack on Titan.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, one of them meeting a very ignominious end at the hands of a horribly grinning, almost Joker-esque, Titan. Sadly.
Well, it's all right. We get some more Hannes. There's the, you know, the we're calling it Attack on Titan Muppet Babies. Oh.
Might you be referencing the junior high?
Indeed, sir. Yeah, that's coming, and we will see Hannes again in that show. So Hannes gets another crack.
He gets one more crack before he gets chomped in half.
Yeah.
And Pauly from One Piece, I mean, what do you think about that role? I mean, that, you know, being a part of, you know, one of the longest running – having a role in one of the longest running animes, yeah, in both America and Japan.
Yeah, yeah. They're up to what, like 7.5 million episodes by now, I think.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that was the I believe that was the Water 7 arc.
Mm-hmm.
And Pauly was the lead shipwright. And he was just, I mean, it was ridiculous fun. You know, when you record a show like that, One Piece, you know, sort of being aimed at a younger audience, the performances tend to be more enhanced or exaggerated. So, you know, it's always fun to play a guy like that who's just so like his you know, his pulse probably never drops below 180. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if any of the other characters drop below that pulse rate either.
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty much a standard in that show.
And I mean, although that is set for a younger audience, I mean, what do you think about, especially One Piece is one very great example of this, where there's kind of a duality. There is the humor that's directed at the younger audience, whereas there's also that subtext and such that, you know, flies over the heads of the little ones and, you know, goes right into the big ones' ears.
Oh, sure.
I mean, what do you think about that kind of thing?
I think that's really animation at its best, you know, and I think our best example of that in the West is Looney Tunes. I mean, those cartoons, those Bugs Bunny cartoons, you know, Sylvester the Cat, Foghorn Leghorn, all these guys, you know, those cartoons. I mean, I know this because I was a toddler watching those cartoons and, you know, loved every minute of it. And, you know, you find as you go back and you watch those things as an adult, if you do, that they absolutely hold up and there are plenty of jokes you did not get. So I think the ability to appeal to kids as well as adults is kind of a unique credit to animation in general. And I think One Piece is a shining example of walking that line very successfully.
And what are your thoughts on, you know, now, I mean, you know, for those of us who grew up in the 1990s and such, you know, we were used to that on a lot of them. I mean, Cartoon Network show, you know, cartoons had many, you know, that kind of subtext. Nicktoons on Nickelodeon had that. Now, you know, there's been a bit more censorship of this, and it's kind of, you know, these, you know, shonen shoujo animes are kind of the last bastion in the English speaking world, for at least in the American English speaking world, for some of these kinds of subtext. What do you think about that? I mean, do you think that, you know, it's kind of we're losing something, or do you think it's kind of, well, things just move on?
Well, I think it's a symptom of the entertainment industry's focus on demographics. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think there was a time when they made these things for the sake of making them, you know, wanted to make them as good as they could be, and wanted them to, you know, and really weren't thinking about, okay, well, we're aiming to the 5 to 9 year olds, or we're aiming for the, you know, 24 to 40 year olds. I think probably the focus on demographics is what's led to that sort of fracture.
Awesome.
You know? And I think that's probably more than anything else what's happening. But at the same time, you know, I mean, you've also got shows that absolutely, you know, have no business being watched by a child. Off the top of my head, I think of Shiki or Sankareya. I mean, these are shows that no kid should watch. Plenty probably have. I think I've heard from more than one of them. But yeah, you know, so.
Oh, what's a few corrupted childhoods?
Hey, you know, my childhood was corrupted. I turned it okay.
we all did. Far out. So, of course, though, most of my listeners will know that you have now become a sort of iconic role in that for those of us who recently this year got our hands on this wonderful anime. Super Sonico, the anime, you play Sonico's manager, Kitamura.
Yeah.
The demon mask wearing manager with a katana.
Yes.
What was it like playing such a colossally Mondo badass?
Oh, so much fun. So much fun. I mean, I always like those characters who really, you know, who don't need to freak out in order to get their point across. You know what I mean? He's like, he's a relatively mild mannered, you know, generally doesn't pop over the top. You know what I mean? And, so it's always fun, but I'll tell you the best thing about recording Kitamura is that He had no lip flaps. He wore a mask the entire time. So as an actor, that gives you a lot more room than usual to sort of massage the lines and make them what you want them to be. And, the director and I worked very closely on making that happen.
Yeah, you were not subject to the dubber's dilemma there.
Yeah, no, it was great. And, frankly, it's there's certainly a benefit to that. But I also like the lip flaps because I like having borders to work in. You know what I mean? I like it when someone, as an artist, I like it when someone gives me a bit of a framework and I get to work within that framework. I mean, if you have carte blanche, if you have, if we were going in and recording these things without any video, I mean, sort of the way they do for like Disney animation or stuff like that. Generally, they have maybe test animation to look at when they go in and record, but they don't have to worry about matching lip flaps or matching, the emotions that are on the faces of those characters. They get to kind of create it as they go, which is fantastic. But I also really enjoy the problem of as an actor having to, in your performance, justify the speed of the mouth or the expression on the face. So I find that even Mozart didn't really write things to serve himself. He always had very strict guidelines to follow. He was commissioned by people to write things for them to serve a specific purpose. And I think it's what you do with those it's what you do with those borders. It's how you operate within those borders, really, that makes it an interesting experience to do and then hopefully to view.
Awesome. Now, I have heard it said by another voice actor, and I'm not saying who, that when I heard about Kitamura, they said, oh, that's just David Wald putting himself into an anime character, projecting himself into an anime character. All right. What is the truth? Did you project a part of yourself into that character, or is it really just some kind of alter ego of yours?
I have the mask here at my table.
Yes.
And I am not afraid to wear it.
Awesome.
Yes. I mean, of course, the easy answer to that question is that every character I've played is an aspect of myself. I mean, that's kind of the job. If you're pulling things out of left field as an actor, then it's not going to mean as much to you. If you're not able to put yourself into a role, then it's going to ring pretty hollow. It usually does ring pretty hollow. So it's kind of your job to put yourself into those roles. Kitamura, we share a sense of humor. I just don't get enough to carry around the katana is the problem. I feel somewhat at a loss.
Well, not yet anyway.
Yeah, no. That's, now we have open carry laws all over the place. I think we should have open carry katana laws. I wonder how that would go over. I'd be happy to walk around with a samurai sword strapped to my back.
Well, everyone, write your congressman or local state senate.
That's right.
But of course, for outside of anime, some of the video game fans might be unaware that you voiced a very iconic character, none other than in Halo Legends, the role of Master Chief.
Yeah.
What was that all about?
Oh, that was cool. And of course, I didn't get the chance to voice Master Chief in any of the games. It was just in that title. But what made sense about that was that the Master Chief of Halo Legends was the Master Chief before any of the games, so he was a younger guy. He was not the Master Chief that we've all played. Not yet anyway. It's a bit of an origin story for him, not his, not how he became a Spartan and everything, but sort of the adventure that led to him going solo and becoming the character that he was. But that was crazy cool. And I'll tell you, we had, that was a rare case where we auditioned for this title and they wouldn't tell us what the title was. So I'm reading the sides for this audition. And again, at the time, I had not played many, you know, many named roles in anime. You know, I had done Tokyo Majin by then. But I hadn't done a lot of really big parts. So I'm, you know, I'm reading these sides and I'm just like, you know, it's a high stakes game for me. I was like, oh, this is the chance. I can break through, that I can make it happen. So I'm reading the sides and I'm just, because of the nature of my personality, I am desperately trying to figure out what this title is. And the only hints they had given us was that, this was not a dub, that it was going to be an original, an original animation, and that it was based on an already established property. That was all they told us about it. But I'm looking at the sides and the only, you know, I think the names in the sides, it was the scene between, Master Chief and the Doctor when he finds her on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Halsey. And, so I'm reading this scene and the names in it are just John and Doctor or something like that, I think. And I'm reading the scene. So I clearly, you know, very quickly, it's easy to tell that this guy is like a hardcore military badass and he's, an accomplished soldier. And this doctor, just by the sort of the ring of her dialogue, seemed like something was off about her. She was a computer or an android. And of course, in Halo Legends, she was not at that point. She was just a regular old lady voiced by Shelley Kaline Black, eventually. But these were the conclusions I had drawn from the sides. Now, at the time, there was, you know, that last Terminator movie had just come out. There was the Sarah Connor, Chronicles, the Terminator TV show that was on at the time. And Terminator was kind of hot. So I'm reading this going, oh my God, is this an anime based on Terminator? And if this is John, then this must be John Connor. And so this is John Connor. I'm auditioning for John Connor. So I'm like freaking out. I'm like, oh my God. And, you know, of course, all this stuff I made up myself. And so, you know, I basically went in and gave him my best John Connor.
Oh, dear.
And then they cast me in it. And then also very unusual in anime, they had this meeting where they brought the cast together. This never happens, right? So Stephen Foster, the director of the project, brought the cast together and then revealed to us all that this was Halo. And we were all like, what? I mean, it was pretty amazing. And what's funny is that Master Chief was the first time I'd ever really unleashed that, you know, that battle hardened field soldier, that, this guy.
It
was
the first shit's about to get real.
Yeah. So I started getting a lot of jobs for that particular, voice. So, thank God for Halo Legends.
Thank God for Halo Legends. Well, you know, talking about all these, you know, casting things and such, you know, I mean, you talked about Joel McDonald. I mean, what is it like, you know, working with the other VAs and the synergy that you guys get? Because for those of you who don't know, anime is not normally done ensemble, as in everybody's all together recording at once. Everybody's, you know, one person records, leaves the room, another person comes in to record, and basically you're passing each other in the hall.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, what do you think of that? Just, like, you know, the interactions you've had with them and then just how, for some odd reason, it just comes together so beautifully.
Well, you know, even when you're working in the theater, you'll have many times where you're playing a scene with an actor that you've never met before. I mean, you'll start working on a play and maybe you've never worked with this particular actor or this particular, or met this individual, you know, who knows, but, you get into the scene and, sometimes there's just magic, you know, it's what they call chemistry. And I'll tell you, the first time it ever really landed on me, was on Tokyo Majin. It was, again, I was voicing Kyuichi and sort of his, his partner in crime in that show was Tatsuma, who was played by Brandon Hernsberger, who has since moved, you know, moved out west, so we don't get to hear him in our anime at Sentai anymore. But you know, on and onward and upward we go. But at the time, Brandon and I had worked together on many theatrical projects, knew each other pretty well, and so going in and recording, you know, opposite him, he most of his stuff had already been, or a good deal of his stuff had already been recorded by the time I got into the studio. So I'm recording my lines and I'm hearing Brandon's voice, and like, you know, I care very deeply for Brandon. And we got into this scene where they're in the, like the subway, and there's this big fight in the subway against this horde of creatures. And there was a point at which the character Tatsuma is like basically pinned down by a giant group of these creatures, and Kyuichi sees this and like freaks out and then does this whole thing to get over and help him out. And let me just tell you, I felt that in the very depths of my heart. I was like, oh my God, Brandon.
Oh no.
So it was
breaking
like
character.
Yeah. So I mean, that was a moment where it really came home for me. And so I didn't have to work very hard to develop the care between those two, you know, that Kyuichi had for Tatsuma. That was sort of a lesson to me in how, you know, even if you don't know the actor, even if you're not familiar with the voice you're hearing in the headphones, you know, you kind of have to conjure that connection. And sometimes there's just chemistry there and it's just there. Shelley Kayleen Black and I, actually, that's I think another example of where there was just really good chemistry. Shelley and I worked together for the first time on Halo. And then for a while, there was a period where we just kept getting cast opposite one another. I think, you know, there were a couple of titles. The one I remember first is Book of Bantora, where you know, we played two characters who were sort of partners, and Shelley and I just had this thing, you know. And we have never, I've still have never been able, Shelley is also a stage actress here in town, and we've never done a play together. So like, we, you know, and we don't like hang out and have drinks or whatever. So whatever it is that, you know, that lives between us is just pure vocal chemistry. And, you know, it's worked to our advantage a couple of times. It's been a long time. I think, you know, she's obviously she's in Akame ga Kill. But her character and mine don't interface a whole lot in that show.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just chemistry. It just happens. And, you know, the really good directors will know that chemistry is there, and they'll use it as Chris Ayres did on Book of Bantora, as you know, as Kyle Jones does. You know, I mean, the chemistry between Molly Searcy and Corey Hartzog in Akame ga Kill is just classic, you know. And I don't know how many times those two have worked together before. So, yeah, it's just, it's a mystery, really. It's just part of the magic of this business.
And the other side of the magic of this business is, of course, the cons.
Yeah.
And what do you think about, like, and you go to these cons, you go to these panels, and you meet these fans who, many of them these days are in the characters.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to do your voice. I mean, what do you think about just, like, I said something into a microphone and it came to life,
yeah,
in front of me. What do you think about that? I mean, just the whole con and fan experience.
It's incredible, man. I mean, it's an amazing experience. I remember my first con, and I don't get to do a lot of cons just because of my theater work. You know, it's tough to balance the two. But I've been able to do a couple. And I remember the first one I went to was Anime Iowa. This was a couple of years ago. And I spotted a Gajeel from Fairy Tail out there. And I had to, you know, at the time I was just sort of walking around incognito, but I went up to him and I told him who I was. And I was just like, I want to thank you, man. I'm really glad I got to see Agaziel before this weekend was over. So it's, I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible to see that happen. It's absolutely amazing. I have to, you know, I have to fight the urge to dress as Gazio myself on a daily basis. He's pretty fantastic. And, you know, I could use all that hair. That'd be fun.
couldn't many of us. Well, you speak a lot about your theatrical work. So would you like to talk to my audience maybe a little bit more about that? You know, the other side of David Walton.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Started doing theater when I was, probably about 11 or 12. And, you know, I mean, theater is the easiest and most instant gratification for an actor or for a would-be actor at age 12. Because pretty much any town has a theater in it, you know, whether a professional theater or a, you know, a whole bunch of community theaters. So if you want to act, no matter where you are, you can probably find a theater somewhere and go audition for them. So once I figured this out at about age 12, there was no stopping me. I was all in, and I did all the theater I could. And now it's a profession. So I have to do all the theater I can. You know, you got to take the gigs when they come.
As you said, you're only a marketable skill.
Yes, exactly. So you gotta work it. But I love doing theater. I love it all. And in the last probably 10 years or so, I think Shakespeare has become my greatest love in theater. So I'll do Shakespeare whenever I can. That's sort of like that's really the top of the heap when it comes to theater. It's really the most rewarding experience I've had on stage. Universally, Shakespeare is a completely different animal. And learning how to execute Shakespeare's verse made me a better actor in every possible way, including in the booth. You know, when you really learn how to make the text itself ring using the tools that the text itself provides, that's what executing Shakespeare is about, you know. So learning how to do that will empower any other acting endeavor you can possibly get involved with.
Very nice. Would you ever consider doing the Shakespeare renditions of the Star Wars stories?
I have. As a matter of fact, at that Anime Iowa Con, it was Tyson Reinhardt and Josh Greeley and I. Tyson came with that book. He had that book and was just like, oh, I can't believe this. So we Xeroxed a couple of scenes out of it and did an impromptu performance of of some scenes from William Shakespeare's Star Wars. And it was incredibly fun. And then I think later that year, a theater here in town staged a reading of that play at a convention here.
Nice.
So I got to do it again. I got to be Vader, man. I mean, there's no beating that one.
Nope, not at all.
It don't get no better. And Shakespeare's Vader, oh, sign me right up.
Right on. So there's one thing though that we're starting to see culturally, and I mean there's the melding of different cultures such as the Shakespeare renditions of Star Wars and such, but even more specifically to your voice acting, there's a kind of a bouncing back of American and Japanese motifs and such when it comes to animated series. And you know, being that, you know, you said you were influenced by, you know, all these different kinds of things. I mean, what do you think about that? Just that, you know, this ping pong back and forth between two, what strangely seem two very similar, but yet very different entertainment cultures.
Well, you know, I think there's an archetype for this in the musical world, which is, back in the day, when there were a lot of you know, when we were bringing African Americans over to the country against their will, they brought this musical tradition with them, these African work songs. And those African work songs eventually led to blues in this country, which eventually led to jazz and rock and roll and country and Western. It was the melding of Western harmony with African rhythm that sort of gave us all the music that we know and celebrate today. I mean, unless you're still listening to Bach and Beethoven, you know, then there is African influence in whatever music you can find, pretty much. And I think that this is, you know, this is tantamount to the same thing. I think, you know, the depth of artistic possibility in anime is endless, you know. And I think it's really, really cool that Western animation is starting to lock into this. There, certainly it's not beyond their notice that there is a loyal and devoted following to anime. And so they're capitalizing on that. But also, you know, some of those artistic choices made in the earliest anime, you know, lend themselves really well to, you know, to being able to draw a character that can communicate emotion. I mean, one of the first things people think about if they're not that familiar with anime is like the small faces and the big eyes. Well, what better than a pair of really big eyes to help you communicate emotion of a character? You know, and Disney cottoned onto this really early. You know, Disney characters all have sort of the same thing, you know, those small faces, those delicate features, but really big eyes. And, you know, I think this crossover has been going on longer than we give it credit for. And I think film is starting to really tap into anime. I mean, you know, if there hadn't been anime, there'd be no Matrix, certainly. You know, the Wachowski brothers are clearly informed by anime in just about every project they've put their hands on. I'm really glad of this. I'm really glad that medium, you know, film, is starting to tap into this well of possibility. Pacific Rim is another example. And, you know, and there've been some titles out there that didn't go over so well. I mean, the Dragon Ball movie was a bit of a disappointment for people. The Speed Racer film, you know, also the Wachowski brothers who did that, was a bit of a disappointment in box office. But then you had Pacific Rim. Now we've got a Ghost in the Shell movie on the way. So I think Hollywood, here in the West, is just starting really to figure out how much potential there is and what incredible storytelling there is in the world of anime. So I'm glad to see this happening because all these things feed each other. You know, I mean, comic books enjoyed a huge burst in sales once we started getting the X-Men movies and the Avengers movies and the Spider-Man movies, you know, and so all these things can feed one another.
Mm-hmm. And what might you say to those who want to go out there and be a part of it like you have, to be a voice actor, to act and all that? I mean, what would you say to them as, you know, kind of the lessons you've learned along the road yourself?
Well, you know, as I'm sure you can imagine, it's a very common question. And the thing that I always say in response to that is, you know, you have a lot of people who say, you know, but I really want to do it, but I have this kind of voice. The last thing you want to worry about is the kind of voice you have. And you don't want to spend your time trying to make your voice into something you think is going to be sellable in anime. The fact is, there is room for all kinds of voices in voice acting. And the key word is acting. I acted for 20 years before I ever voiced an anime character. And that's the step you can't skip. You have to learn how to act. And that you have to. That's because if you have this beautiful, melodious, amazing voice, but you can't act, no one can use you. But if you have a really weird sort of fringy voice that's odd or whatever, but you can really act, they will find a place for you. So that's what I say, is you've got to spend your time sharpening your skills in acting. And beyond that, the rest will follow. And who knows, I certainly never anticipated, working in anime when I was coming up as an actor. It took me by surprise. Mm-hmm. And now it might very well be my very favorite expression of acting. I delight in it. I delight in it, and I love every minute of it. So you never know. I mean, you might go into acting studies, however you manage to accomplish them, thinking, oh, one day I want to be in voicing an anime, and you might find out that you have a real talent for doing Tennessee Williams. So you never know where it can take you. But regardless of the kind of acting you want to do, acting is what you have to learn how to do. And as I said, I did it for 20 years before I ever stepped into a sound booth.
There you go. Is there anything else you'd like to tell my audience? Where might they find you?
Oh, yes. Well, you'll find me on Facebook under my name, David Wald. You'll find me on Twitter, David Wald. _VA, I think. But yeah, I'm pretty easy to find out there. There's a quick search will lead you to me.
Well, sir, I want to thank you very much for taking the time, and I wish you all the best in your future theatrical ventures, sir.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it. It's been a good time.
Always. This is Special K of the Black Flag Cast.